Okay, good afternoon, and thank you for coming back to my class. To start off with, I thought we'd look at the first paper on the list of phonics definitions. And I'm hoping today also you came with your more things that you'd want to learn today about phonics or how to reinforce something in reading. So I learned a few new things on this paper that I didn't know before. Everything has a name in phonics. So phonics is a system of sound symbol association that is taught to children for the purposes of learning to read and spell. And then you have implicit phonics and explicit phonics. I always thought there was just one phonics. You know, you teach children to read by sounds. Well, this implicit phonics moves from the whole to the smallest part. And through comparison and identification, students identify new words by their shape, beginning and ending letters, and context clues. To me, this didn't sound like phonics. So we would teach in our schools the explicit phonics, which is systematic, you learn the sounds, and then sequential instruction in letter patterns, and their sounds help children to decode the words then. And I don't think there's any right way or right letter to start with, whether you're teaching CLE or Rebecca or Pathway or whatever. They start with their own sounds in each curriculum, and I haven't heard of any that you have to start with this letter and you have to start with this letter. But there are some that start reading earlier, and I would say CLE would be one of them. You learn the D, S, M, F, and then the vowel A, and then you can take those letters all and make words. So they start reading sooner than other phonics programs. So the next one on your paper is a phonogram. And I first would have heard about a phonogram probably in sixth grade. One of my sister, usually you don't think of sixth graders doing phonics programs, but we did. And she was homeschooling us. And we did the Writing Road to Reading. I don't know how many of you have heard of that. And that was a good program. Didn't mind it. But a phonogram is a letter or letter group that is a symbol for a sound. And each letter of the alphabet is a phonogram. There's various combinations such as CH, SH, TH, AE, AY, etc. Those are also phonograms. Most of the consonants are for only one sound, but there's other phonograms such as the vowels and the consonants C, G, and Y, and those are symbols for more than one sound. And maybe to give you an example, I brought these flashcards here. They have theirs written like this. I didn't bring the CLE ones. I figure you're all familiar with those ones. They would have like maybe how you would write it and then how you might see it in a book. So there's a V and the G is very common writtenly like this. And a lot of children don't recognize that when they see it in a book. And then CLE teaches these sounds also, but I have used these and incorporated into CLE and they would say this oi that we do not use at the end of English words, and then we say it together, and I'll say why, and they say, after they learn it, of course, English words do not end with I. And you have A, two-letter A, that we may use at the end of English words. We have J, three-letter J, and that just differentiates it from the letter J for students. And this one, I use this all the time, E, double E, always says E. So you can also get other phonogram flashcards. This is another one that we had. They have animals with each of the letters. It's kind of a fun one for students to do things on their own. They would have on the back side just the letter. Turn it around, they would have a gorilla with a G. And they also have, like for the animal, just the animal. And then they have a little thing in the back you can talk about, and what letter would this be? What does this picture start with? And the next one is phonemic awareness, and that's just an awareness of the sounds that make up our language. And a phoneme and a phonogram are about the same thing, except for the phonogram was the letter, and the phoneme is the sound of that letter, basically. There's a whole paragraph here of what a phoneme is. And usually, if you were going to see it Oh, I think it's and on the back of a card to tell you how to say something, it would be between slash marks. So that if you ever see it like that in CLE or any other curriculum, you'd see that you say the sound and not the letter name. Then you have the voiced and unvoiced sounds. And there again, I learned something new. I always thought that you know how they teach you the TH? You have your voiced one and the unvoiced, the S and the Z. Well, there's also, for the voiced one, there's also B and G. And how you can tell whether that's a voiced or an unvoiced, you can have students do this. They think this is the neatest thing just by putting your hand on your throat here. And they can feel it in their throat, the sound of the V or G. Versus if you put your hand here and go P, F, or other letters. I just gave a few examples. Then you have segmenting and blending, and those are basically the same thing, except for you do it backwards. Segmenting, you identify the individual sounds like K, at, and you make it cat. And blending is a way to decode the words by individual sounds together to make a word, cat, and then go K. And grapheme, that was a new one for me too. It's a way to write the phoneme. That's your writing. Writing is very much incorporated into phonics and reading. Then you have your diphthong, and that is a gliding vowel where the vowels begin as one vowel sound and moves to another sound, like the ow, ow, ou, aw, au, so on. And decoding. It's the ability to apply your knowledge of letter-sound relationships, including knowledge of letter patterns, to correctly pronounce written words. And children doing phonics and reading will decode a lot of words, too. And a lot of people would say to my students, oh, your work is so easy. Well, they don't take into account. These are first graders. A lot of them didn't go to kindergarten. Some might have. But they are learning so much in a short amount of time, in a year. When second grade, I would say that would be the easiest grade because you're building on what you learned the year before, and then so on. Every year you build on what you had before. And some come to school and that first year can be pretty difficult if they haven't learned some at home yet. So the next paper I have on your papers is a letter. And this is something that if you want to just copy it off and send it home to your students, or if you want to tailor it to where you are teaching, this is something that, you know, all the time we don't have time to take to have the read to our students to read to us, or we read to them. School day is only so long. So this letter to the families is a way that you can put some responsibility on them, and it can be an enjoyable time of reading, and not oh, I have to read this story. Okay, so and there's a lot of information just in this letter, so maybe I'll read it so the others. So did you know that there's a direct correlation between the number of books read to a child and the child's reading success? Reading aloud to your child is one of the best ways to help your child become a strong reader. Here are some other reasons to read aloud to your child. To let your child see literacy skills modeled by family members. To positively reinforce literacy skills learned in school. To build vocabulary. To foster imagination and creativity. To enjoy books together and build a warm relationship with each other. To build background knowledge. To instill a love of lifelong learning. As you read aloud to your child, keep these tips in mind. Try to read aloud with your child every day. Establish a regular time for reading together. Share some of your own favorite children's books with your child. Visit the library and help your child look for books that reflect special interests. Remember that listening is a skill that is strengthened the more children are read to. You may want to increase the number of minutes you spend reading with your child each day to reflect these growing skills. And I didn't put that on here, but 10 minutes is it's not like you want them to read an hour to their children every night. 10 minutes. And let's see. If you're reading a longer book to your child and need to break it down into segments, always stop at a suspenseful part. You'll both look forward to returning to the story the next time. I have a hard time doing that. I have stayed awake long into the night because I couldn't put it down. But another thing is talk with your child about what you're reading. Discuss predictions of what will happen next in the story. And vary your reading pace according to the story, like slow down, speed up, go ahead and be dramatic. I have a hard time with that sometimes. Anyway, and respond to your child's questions about the book. You can ask what your child thinks and share your own ideas. So enjoy the books and the time spent together sincerely. You put your name in there. So any questions about that? Or so a Japanese philosopher once said, to teach is to learn, and teaching a child to read is that and more. It is a chance to grow and share, to touch and laugh, to amaze and be amazed. To quote another teacher, it is a chance to assist in a miracle. But alas, teaching a child to read is not always smooth sailing. And in a role as a miracle worker, you probably encountered or will encounter, if you haven't taught before, any number of questions or problems that you may be hesitant or unsure, and even you can be kept from reaching your full potential as a teacher. Not always knowing an answer is natural in the teaching process, as it is in the learning process for the student. So the more knowledge you can get from others, it will be helped you as you teach. So don't be afraid to ask for help. I'm sure there are lots of people to ask for help. If you have, maybe it's even something as simple as you need your memory verses for that week typed up for the students or something like that. Feel free to ask somebody so that you can do things that others can't do. So I thought we'd look a little bit on the history of the English alphabet, because I was curious on some of this. And in an ideal alphabet, or my ideal alphabet, each letter would have one sound, and that's exactly what they would say, and that's it. There would be no exceptions. Know that this letter has five different sounds, and that's kind of how the Latin is. That would be the closest to nearly perfect, that it's very easy to pronounce and spell. But English is from like a Germanic language, and is written with the symbols of the Latin alphabet. So when you combine those two, they don't really mesh as well. And Latin has 6 vowel letters, and English has 15 vowel sounds. The Latin alphabet has 21 consonant letters, and English has 25 or more consonant sounds, as much as 44. Much of the difficulty of English reading and spelling comes from that lack of fit between those, and also English has words from Old English, Old Norse, Norman French, Greek, and they just kept their same spelling and just meshed it in. It's like, well, it doesn't fit with our sounds, but there it is, and there's your exception. So, one thing I like about reading is it's a conversation between you, a reader, and the author. And it's our vehicle to faraway places and long-ago times. Now, like in the poem, The Road Not Taken by Robert Frost, for example, it was written over 100 years ago. And if he hadn't written that, they say that every time someone dies, an entire library would die with them. So if those before us hadn't written what they had done, we wouldn't have all that we have today. So, and everyone ought to know the joy of decoding unfamiliar words, syllable by syllable, exploring the uncharted words, world of new words and fresh ideas. If we were limited to only the words we know, we would be talking very simply, and we'd keep talking that way if we couldn't add new words to our vocabulary. And when children enter first grade, their vocabulary is estimated to be about 20,000 words. Not much in the grand scheme of all the words we have. But phonics is the clearest connecting link between the vocabulary and the printed page. So after learning these sound-to-symbol skills, most children are able to read almost anything their speaking and listening vocabularies allow. they are unlimited by readability formulas or simplified in any way. And it gives students the key to read words that do not follow the exceptions of the English language. And maybe they're like, when they do explicit phonics, they might be guessing at the words. They do a lot of guessing. And so explicit phonics has 44 sounds and 200 spelling patterns. So reading, spelling, writing, math even comes into play with reading. All that, it all works, goes together, especially reading and writing and spelling. And reading is taught like any other skill, like learning how to sew, play the piano. You start with one note, one stitch, one sound at a time. And then you gradually combine those to more complicated chords, patterns, syllables, and words. So sight reading whole groups of notes at a time, as in playing the piano, or sewing an intricate smocking on a dress. I'm trying to think of something difficult to do. It's like, I've never done that before, but it looks pretty, but it's very difficult, I hear. Or reading whole sentences in books is what occurs naturally as a result of learning one letter at a time. So phonics is also effective in older children. It's not just first something you do in first grade and then you're done. You don't have to teach it anymore. And second graders can benefit from phonics if they didn't quite get it. It builds upon it in second grade, even third grade. And then some students, they might maybe even need to review more often than others. And so I would say that, like I said yesterday, review is way better to do than try to keep pushing them on. And even though phonics is effective as a tool to get children started reading, it does have the shortcomings of that exceptions to the rules that don't go with the sounds we have, again. And that's why we have, in most curriculums, the use of sight words. And that, they say, was introduced into reading curriculums around after the World War II. Where the books that came out were the Dick and Jane books, and those learned by sight a lot, and memorizing the look and say method is what they called it. And sometimes that meant spending a full year being drilled over the same 200 and 300 words. So that to me sounds like a lot of work. So I thought right now we'd look at some sight word activities. And a lot of these ideas do not just have to be for sight words. They could be used for just learning the sounds. They could be used, I'll try to point that out as I go through each one. So you can use magnetic letters. This is something so that they can see it and touch it and do things with it so that they do the different ways of learning. I'll talk about that a little bit more. So magnetic letters, you can do the sound, show them the sound on that. You can have them, if you're learning the sight word sum, you can tell them to spell it out with the magnetic letters. They can make words in sand. Now, if you don't have sand, which I haven't had on hand sometimes, I've used cream of wheat. Grits works. You go to your kitchen, you can find all kinds of things that they can write the words in sand. Play-Doh. I mentioned that one yesterday. They can see it in 3D. They can use pipe cleaners, and those are nice. You can bend them to the letters you want to do. You can do just the letters. You can do them sight words. Give them junk mail and magazines. And you're like, what would you do with that? Well, you can have them cut out or circle. They could. I usually have them cut out letters that they're learning, and they can glue them on a book that they make throughout the year. I would have one, let's put it here, where I just take like a printer paper and I would put 13 sheets of paper together, staple it in the middle, fold it in half, and then put the letters of the alphabet on each page. So if we start with the letter S in CLE, I would go to the S page and have them put that there, glue pictures and letters from junk mail, magazines, whatever. And they could also do that with sight words and cut out their sight words also. I've also had them take Dick and Jane books especially, and I'll look through it beforehand so I know what page. Usually I'll pick out just a page and have them find come and see how many times you can find it on that page. And that is another good thing of having them do it on their own. So once you get them started, you can have them do that, and you can maybe work with your other students. You can play memory. I have two sets of cards with your the sight words on them, and they can just, you know how to, we all know how to play memory. They could play go fish. They could play snap, and that's, we need at least probably 20 words for that. And there again, you'll need the two sets of cards, and if you're thinking, oh, but that's a lot of work, there again, that's where your friends come in handy, your mom, sister, whoever, they can write them for you. So for snap, you would shuffle and deal half of the cards to two players, or you can, that's how I wrote it, but you can adapt it to your, how you want to play it. So they would get half of the cards, and they take turns to lay a card face up on the ground, or table, whichever. And then one does it, and then the other one does it, and the top card, if it matches the one underneath, they see who can slap it first. And as I go over these things, if you don't remember what I said, I'd be more than happy to repeat it, so you can remember it. For touching, you can do trace the sight word on their back and see if they can recognize it. Some have said to do it on the hand. We'll have to make sure they don't see what you're doing too. I think that's harder though. Hearing, you can say a sight word and ask a student to find it in the stack of cards that, you know, the same cards you've used for memory and go fish and snap. You can take those same cards. You could say, come, and they would go to the stack, flip through them until they find it, and then you can go from student to student. You can have them listen to an audiobook until they hear a sight word, and they would write that sight word on a paper. Well, they would stop the audiobook, of course, and write that, and then start it back up again, hear another sight word, then go and write it on the paper. You can write sentences with missing words. Whether maybe take five sentences, write the sentences down, leave out a couple words, and have, I don't know, maybe 10 cards to choose from of the sight words. There again, you can take those same cards you had before, and they can fill in the blanks and see if they can fill in the right word. Use a pop-it fidget toy. And I actually have gotten one for each of my students this year, and they can take the pop-it fidget toy, and if the word is sad, they can pop it as they say the sounds, s-a-d. That can be used with multiple words. Find and swap words. Take a fly swatter anyway. I would imagine you want to new one, not one you go and swat your flies with. But, and you can use again the double set of cards, and you could have a set and you say the word and the word come, and the other set could be laid out on the table, like in if memory, but they'd be face up so that they can see them. And so the student, you'd say the word come, and the student would have with a fly swatter, and they look until they find the word come, and then they swat the word come. Students love that one. Also, take a Ziploc bag, gallon size would be best. You put some paint in there, not a lot, but not just a tiny amount. And you close it up with there so there's no air in it, and it will. You could have it on the table or their desk, and you can have them practice their sight words on there. You could also practice their letters on that too, where if the word is come, they can take their finger and spell out the word come. And you can actually see it in the paint, and it's not messy. You can also have them paint too, but that can be messy. And then again, a lot of these are, or some of these are, where they don't need you to stand there and watch them while they do that. You can do singing. There's a song to the tune of B-I-N-G-O, and it goes, there was a sight word of the day, and fill in the blanks, some was our sight word, some, and some was our sight word. You could do a pom-pom search. Children like this one also. They like things that they can touch and play with. So you take a cup and on the have it right side down, and on the bottom of the cup you would put their sight words. And what's nice about this, you can also stack them up and they don't take much room. So the sight word is on the bottom, and you hide a pom-pom, it could be any little toy or whatever, underneath these cups. And they try to find the word that you, or this pom-pom. So every time they lift a cup, they have to say the word that's on the cup. And you can have them where they, one child lifts it up until they find it, or they can go around the room. Or once they find it, then you can have them hide it again, or you hide it again. And however you, that's really, you can just do it however works best for you in your classroom. Another fun one is kaboom. I don't know if you've ever heard of this before. And you'll just use popsicle sticks for this. And you take the popsicle sticks and write the sight words. It could be just words that they would read even. And you write them on the end so that if you would have them in a cup, you wouldn't be able to see them at the other end. And then you take a few and just write the word kaboom on it. Okay? And so the first student pulls out a stick, and if they can read the word correctly, they get to keep it. If they don't, they have to put it back in the cup. If they get a kaboom, that means that whatever sticks they have, they have to put all those sticks back in the cup. Another idea I just read, that instead of like putting them back in the cup when you get a kaboom, you need to give it to another player so that when all the sticks are out of the cup, the game will have an ending. If you put them back in the cup, usually the game does not end until you say so. You could do rainbow words. So you would give them six markers, or use what they have, and each color has a word, and so you would take those and they can write them in a rainbow shape. But the, let's say the word some, they need to write it five times, and then another color, yellow, would have two, maybe the other color would be the, and so on. Another thing you can do, and this where you can have someone else do it for you. You can write the words in a white crayon. And I've even done this with memory verses, because it's something fun that they like to do, and they're learning something also. So it would be prep work beforehand, whatever you would decide to write, whether sight words or just the letter for them to find at first, or memory verse, whatever. And so you write it with white crayon on white paper. So if you just take copy paper, write the word in white. They can take watercolors and paint over it, and then they can see the letter or word that you put there. You could also do dot painting, if you've seen those dot markers. If you don't have those, kind of the same thing, take a toothpick and paint, and do the words. You could have it already written on the paper and they would just put dots over it, or not even written, you just tell them the word and see if they can spell it. So make it a little bit harder. You could also, in my classroom I have two doors, one going one direction, one going the other. And on the door that they mainly go out, is the one I would use, you can put a sight words all along there, and before they go out the door, they have to say those sight words before they go out the door. I've also done this with hands. I put them on hands, the times tables, when I had children that needed to learn the times tables and had to put their hand on there and say the answer to those before they went outside. And you could also give them a pointer if they want a pointer to point to those words as they say them. You could play hopscotch on the, if you have a place to put chalk. You could put the words in each of the boxes for hopscotch, and they would throw a little bean bag, and they have to say each of the words as they hop on it to the bean bag, and then they can hop back, and the next one would go, and so on. You could do tic-tac-toe. This is an easy one for two students to do together. And let's say your word for the day was sum. So you give sum to one student, and the day before the yesterday was two. So if the person for sum goes here, maybe the person with two, and see who can get tic-tac-toe. You can do a muffin tin toss, like you would take a muffin tin so that you have something sturdy. You take the muffin papers and put the word on it on the bottom, and you would toss a ball, and wherever the ball landed in the muffin tin, they need to be able to say that word to you. And you could also take a guess who game. If you have a guess who game, instead of the pictures, you could put their sight words on those and play it just like you would play guess who. Except, and like you would say, for example, does your word that you've chosen, does your word have a E in it? Does it have a S in it? And so on, so they guess which one it is and guess who. So that would be what I have right now for sight words. And the less sight words you have, like with learning with phonics, helps children to read harder books earlier. Not really harder, but ones that they can enjoy more when they're younger, like maybe Anne of Green Gables or Little House on the Prairie. Some children have a difficult time just reading those, and then by the time they're, especially maybe boys, by the time they're 12, they're not interested anymore. So I've had younger ones like, oh, those were good books. And so there's different ways that now that children learn to read, and I touched some on that. So we might need to tailor our lesson, learn how your students read, and so you can tailor your lesson to the way that they learn the best. And then you'll be able to get more from them. Whether they're auditory or visual or kinesthetic learners, using the different things, whether it's just you talking and they can get it, or hearing it as you speak, or something they have to see written down, whether it's something you write on the board or they write on the board, or kinesthetic where it's physical, you touch it, you can see it. And, you know, also incorporate, when you incorporate all of those things together in one, the more you can meet each of the students' needs. So, again, explicit phonics builds words from single letters moving into the smallest parts to the whole. And an implicit phonics teaches the whole word first. And an example of that, I thought this was almost, surely that doesn't happen. So consider the words laparoscopy and lobotomy. I knew what the one was, but I didn't know what the other ones. Well, they each begin with the same and end with the same letters. They begin with L, end with Y. They each have a similar shape. They each have similar meanings because they're both surgical procedures in their general context. But few of us, however, would wish for a surgeon who is only able to read these words by their shape, beginning and ending letters, and context clues. So with explicit phonics, these words are read by syllables like laparoscopy and lobotomy. So there's no chance that you could confuse those two things together. And so there are mistakes that people actually make, that this story here in Virginia, a teacher was recently hired to tutor a licensed pharmacist who could not discern the difference between chlorpromazine, which lowers blood sugar, and chlorpromazine, which is an antipsychotic. Two totally different drugs. So if we want our students to grow up to be readers and be able to not just look at the first letter, the last letter, the whole word, we want to make sure they know their phonics. And there are some reading programs that they claim to teach phonics. There's balanced reading programs, systematic contextual phonics, embedded phonics, and so on. But most of those are implicit phonics, where the words are learned as wholes. So I would say almost everyone would agree that reading for meaning should be our primary objective, to be able to comprehend what they've read. And when they can read for meaning, they can focus on that meaning of what they're reading, because the sounds, they come automatic to them. Your brain is like a computer. And as far as memory and being able to retrieve that memory is concerned, we might think of explicit phonics as the software program, the logical framework in which patterns and categories of words are organized and filed. And words are quickly retrieved when reading. And another thing which is great is those skills don't fade. Maybe you haven't read for 20 days. Do you forget how to read? No, it comes naturally to you. And when you have these good reading skills down pat, your math improves, your spelling improves, writing even. So, maybe I'll go and include a few more of these ways to reinforce phonics. That'll be another page that you have. I mentioned a few of these songs. I have a list of songs which I still need to get them copied. If I thought maybe I would copy one so that if those that wanted it, I wouldn't have a ton of copies then. And there are songs that where they say, I have it with me, it's on my computer, that and they might fit the tune of This Old Man or The Muffin Man. Jingle Bells was another one. Most of them are a lot of just the little children's tunes that fit with the learning the sounds of the alphabet. Games. I give you a list of games. Page of games. There's I Spy. So you can say, I spy with my little eye a word that begins with the B sound. And they can point to words in their lesson, a book, magazine, etc. You can hide things around the room that begin with that sound. I have just little tiny things, like a magnetic letter 6, for the letter S, a sack, or you might do a little pie, or just to find little things that you might have at home already. A kitchen is a great place to go to for finding something that begins with that letter. And one thing, it's easy to put away because they all go in one room. Then you have the train game, and I have it here so you don't have to try to remember what I said, so that you can do what it says. And there again, you can have someone help you get all this ready even before school starts if you would like to use those. You have What's in My Word, In the Bag, and buzz. So there'd be a little bit of, oh, I need to get this together and get it so that I can, my students can do it. But if you have a bunch of these things already done, and you need, let's say you need to work with your other, maybe if you have first, like I'll have first, third, and fourth, get them started on what you want them to do, and then you go and teach class for the third graders or fourth graders or whoever it may be. And a lot of this can be done quietly. It doesn't have to be a rousing game of memory or whatever. The what's my word is like hangman. I'm sure we've all played that before. You can use that with, and that's, they can do that quietly so that you can be doing a class with the others. The next one I have is a flannel graph, and I'll be talking more about that tomorrow. You could do read aloud and story time. I'm sure you all do have story time. That's just modeling good reading techniques when you have story time. There might be other times that you read a story, like the story in the CLE or BSR. You could do a lima bean letter, and that idea came from, I don't like lima beans. So I was cleaning out the cupboard, and I found lima beans. And so I just, because they're a bigger bean, I just wrote the letters of the alphabet on there. And I can keep them from year to year. And they can use those beans to spell their names, sight words, other words, or you can just ask, okay, can you give me the bean for the letter, the sound of A? You can do letter stamps, and I have ones that they actually are like dotted, and so they can trace over those and write it. Children just love inking it and stamping it wherever. Then you have, start by having children draw a picture of something that they want to write about. And now that's important in that if it's something that you want them to write about, they have a hard time coming up with what to do. Versus if it's something they like I had boys that just loved airplanes. They would draw airplanes any chance they got. So have them draw something that they like. And ask that before they can even write stories, maybe it's even like the first couple weeks of school even, and invite them to dictate their stories to you about their picture. And you can write them down for them. And then as they progress, that they can write it down. And I keep these till the end, make like a book out of them. And it's kind of like a memory of the school year. And you can see how they've progressed and how their stories have progressed. You can do, I've talked about the alphabet journals already, magnetic letters. Word boxes. Those, you could have a picture of a fox, and you could take your magnetic letters or letter tiles, Scrabble letters, and you, if you have three boxes, you can put the ox in there. You could also have the word written and they just copy it. Depends how far advanced they are. The tactile letter cards. That's what these would be. You could also make your own out of sandpaper, felt. These, you could, they can feel it. It feels like sandpaper. And you have them trace their finger over the letter. You could also, as far as sight words go, you can buy sight word cards if you don't have ones with your curriculum. And if you buy two sets of them, then you, there you go, you have your two sets of cards. Already for you, didn't have to do anything. And a lot of Dollar Tree or places like that have those kind. They can trace letters in shaving cream. They love that one also. And a bonus, it cleans their desk. If you don't have a wood one, that is. I wouldn't do it on a wood desk. I've done shaving cream for art projects. And they love to write things in there. That shaving cream, I've used it for, you mix food coloring. Swirl it on there. It makes a nice paper, and you can use that paper for another project. I've had them make cards, make books out of those papers. You can also have students sort small object by letter sounds. And a lot of these you can also use for their spelling words too, because we need to be done for today. But you can just take a wet paintbrush, and on a blackboard, it wouldn't work here, but you would they would dip it in the water and write that word on the chalkboard, and they think it's the neatest thing. It just disappears after a while. Then on the back side of that paper is about the reading wheel. I want to touch on that really quick. And you can get a lot of mileage out of these reading wheels. And I didn't on your paper. I just wrote it here. I don't know if you can see that or not. Maybe I'll put a big one here. It explains it, I think, fairly well on your paper. But if you have this circle, two circles, one larger, one smaller, metal fastener. And let's say if you start with one, you have the letter A, and you for a vowel in this one, and you put your consonants on this one, M or X or B, and you'd have to do it right so that when it goes around the wheel, they could sound blend it together, am, axe, and so on. You could also have another one that you put all the vowels in this section here. And then you put a bunch of consonants through here, and as they turn it, they can be blending words. You could even do three of them if you want to do a three-letter word. Yeah. Yeah, I guess that wouldn't work. But you could also put the consonants in the center one, the consonants here, and put the vowel over here, or one vowel over here, and do that around the consonants. And that way you have the consonant and then the vowel. But this one you would have the vowel and the consonant. And this one you'd have a consonant and a vowel. So again, that's something you could have done ahead of time also. And the last one on there is have a treasure hunt. And you can hide piece of paper with that letter on it or the word, and have them find them around the room. And that's something they enjoy doing. So thank you for listening. Thank you.